Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hey, welcome everyone to a Baseball America Podcast. I'm John Manuel, along with JJ Cooper. Thanks for tuning in to today's Baseball America Podcast. Our podcasts are sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. If you are a baseball fan, you need to check out baseballism.com or visit their retail locations in Cooperstown, New York, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Visit baseballism.com and enter the code BA2017 to save 20% off. That's baseballism.com. Enter the code BA2017 for 20% off your gear. And JJ, we are gearing up for Friday's MLB Network show, Friday, February 10th. BA 50-1 prospect countdown. We'll do a Facebook Live next week, talking 51-100. We have Chad all day.
When that Facebook Live is still to be determined. I do believe, is it not?
I thought it was Tuesday, but whatever it is,
we'll let you know.
We
may do another one.
Yeah, whenever it is, we'll let you know for sure because we have a lot to talk about. We like these players. We like prospects, and we like talking about them, and that's why we do these podcasts. For all 30 organizations for their top 10s and top 30s. For these in the second half, JJ, some people are a little bit lucky. We're going a little bit deeper, a little more detail. The early podcast really focused on the top 10s in the American League. But in the National League, we're going a little bit deeper, and the St. Louis Cardinals are today's focus. Some technical issues, not technical, technically with their dog issues back in Durham. Glad to pinch hit today and talk Cardinals. But JJ, this Cardinals organization, we kind of tag team working on this last year on the top 30. Mm-hmm. And this year, Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch back at it again. But this is a Cardinals organization at a crossroads and also an organization that really, for the first time in what seems like 20 years, a significant misstep. I mean, the last blotch on this organization really was Big Mac and Andrew Steen Dione and the Cardinals kind of being at the center of baseball's steroid scandal. What a shock. Tony La Russa at the center of that twice in his career. But this hacking scandal is more completely out of the norm of Major League Baseball, whereas they were just a kind of a tipping point in the industry.
Right. I don't consider that a scandal. That was the reality of it is that there was no punishment with that.
Right.
That was something that was actually not in any way against baseball rules at the time, I do believe.
Well, no, it was against the rules. It just wasn't an enforced rule, and it wasn't a collectively bargained rule. But there was a rule. There was a memo.
I guess more of
a mission statement, depending on...
we don't like you to do this.
Yeah, exactly.
What happens if I do this?
We don't
like you to do this. Exactly. Let me emphasize this.
But you can't really say in any way. They didn't want you to do it, but
they didn't have
again, they didn't have any mechanism to stop it.
In baseball, if there is no punishment, in essence, that means it is
allowed. It ain't no crime, right?
I mean, that's the reality of it. If you said we do not want you to put someone in the stands with a walkie-talkie signaling in the stealing signs, teams would do it. It's like, okay, I understand you don't want us to, but no, it has to be. You don't get to do it, and if you do, we're gonna drop the hammer on you. We can tell you right now, they do not want you hacking into other teams' databases, and if they do, they will punish you.
Right. We know that for sure now. We talked about this punishment before, but it's not just that, but that's that coming on the heels of an 86-win season and no playoffs, and the Cardinals have been such constants in the playoffs. Definitely feels like times are changing for this organization, and it's a much more athletic and less college-heavy and more international prospect list. And I think that's for the good, but at the same time, JJ, this is not what they're known for. I mean, they developed Oscar Tavares and Carlos Martinez. They certainly have developed some impact international talent. Obviously, Tavares' career tragically cut short. But Carlos Martinez just signed a big contract extension, and Alex Reyes is the best pitching prospect in baseball. What's your quick take, your quick overview of the Cardinals system as it is right now?
There's some guys who are going to help here. And the thing about it is to have Alex Reyes fronting this, to have Luke Weaver there, these are upper-level guys who have actually already arrived in St. Louis, at least briefly.
It'd be a very different farm system if those guys had pitched over 50 innings. Reyes is at 46, and Weaver's at how many innings? Like 20-something?
36.
36. Those two guys are very experienced.
You take those two away and you go Delvin Perez, Carson Kelly, Magnura Sierra, Sandy Alcantara, you know, that's still not a terrible.
Right.
That's not a, well, there's nothing here system.
You take those two guys away and there's very little at double A or above in the way of top 10 prospects. Carson Kelly, if they didn't have those two guys, I probably would have pushed for Carson Kelly as the number one prospect as a safer bet at a premium position, whereas Delvin Perez, clearly toolsier, higher ceiling.
Are you feeling lucky?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's him.
You know, but you do look at this and you say, you do have Alex Reyes at the top. And Alex Reyes is everything you want a number one prospect to be.
Yes.
Especially when you throw in, oh yeah, by the way, really good in the big leagues in a semi lengthier. This is not he came up and he had a good start.
Yeah.
This is a guy who kind of made some of the strides last year that you wanted to see made. But the thing that stood out with Alex Reyes, and this goes back to when he was in the Appy League, but especially goes back to when he was in the Midwest League and on, he's always had some of the best stuff. And his stuff is, at its best, way more devastating than some of the other pitchers that we think of as the top pitchers in the minors.
That's true. I mean, he has all of the strengths of, say, Tyler Glasnow without the weakness of being 6'8", you know, and his stuff is just better. He throws harder than Tyler Glasnow. He was 101 miles an hour in the Futures game. I think he touched 102 in the big leagues. I was on your top 100 mile per hour chart the other day. His breaking ball is, you know, like 70 grades you get for on the breaking ball, on the curve for Alex Reyes.
If you're a right-hander who has, an 80 fastball at its best and a 70 curveball, right there, that by itself, I mean, again, I like the scouting adage that you've used, which is, if you do that, the changeup out of the hands of 50.
All right, pretty much. I mean, it really doesn't have to be that good. If he has...
And he doesn't need to throw it that much.
Right. If he develops major league average fastball command, which he doesn't have yet.
No.
But if he develops major league average fastball command, he's probably the best starting pitcher in the big leagues. I mean, that's because his stuff, his pure stuff, is as good as, say, Noah Syndergaard. It's as good or better in terms of pure stuff, just grading out, than Clayton Kershaw. I mean, Kershaw has more pitches, and he's left-handed.
And the thing about it is, I would not say he'd have to have better than average. That's the thing, is no, because Clayton Kershaw
has put in a cup to, you know, hit the gnat in the butt. Fastball
right.
command. But he's competing in that echelon.
Right. I would say if he developed that 60-70 command to go with everything else.
Which I don't think he ever will.
I don't think he will, but yes, then he would be. But
that's his neighborhood though, JJ, and we don't say that about other prospects.
If he has 40 control, and I'm thinking 40 control, he can be an extremely effective big league starter.
Right, because the average big league starter right now is what, around 2.5 walks per nine?
Or a little more.
And you know, there are very few. It's very hard to find a big league starter with more than 3.5 walks per nine. And his rate in the minor leagues is around 4.5.
Right. But again, what you saw, and this is what you want to see. Young pitcher, it got better last year. It wasn't great.
Right.
But it got better. And that's really, you know, you're looking at, you've seen this, he's getting there.
Yeah.
He's still a very young pitcher. He's getting there. The thing that's also fascinating to me about that is that you look at him and you say, okay, number two on this list, Luke Weaver. Now, Luke Weaver does not have the upside of Alex Reyes.
Certainly.
But Luke Weaver does have the upside to be a very useful starting pitcher.
I think so. I don't think he's Tim Hudson, but that's because Tim Hudson's a borderline Hall of Famer. That's a player that Luke Weaver has been compared to physique-wise, looseness of the arm, stuff-wise, throughout his career, which has always been like a junior Tim Weaver. Tim Hudson. Yeah, he's kind of a junior Tim Hudson. I mean, his fastball doesn't have that kind of sink, but he's got a really good changeup. But he does challenge the right-hander with a fringy breaking ball adage. So, for him, fastball command's much more important.
Oh, absolutely.
He can't get by with fringy command because he doesn't have the weapons.
The good news for him, though, is he has demonstrated he can hit his spots.
Right. Right.
He does not fall behind in counts.
I'll tell you, the other thing that I like about Luke Weaver is he's just got a little something extra. He's got a little swag to him. He's got a lot of confidence in himself. And at the same time, he backs that belief up with a lot of work. He really works at it. And I was shocked that you throw out the four outings and six innings he threw in the Gulf Coast League. His best strikeout rate was what he did in the big leagues. Now, I just was surprised at how many bats he missed in the major leagues. And that was very encouraging. You know, in his short time, give up a lot of home runs. That's generally not been his MO. Again, he works the bottom of the strike zone. So
that is something though. When you talk about again, and he's not short, so we're not talking about truly short right-hander.
Right.
But the smaller, there's a little less plane on the fastball. Right. All those things. It is something that at least is there's a slight cause for concern because for one, as we keep talking about, there's a lot more home runs now in the big leagues than there is in the minors.
Yes.
And he is a guy that he's going to be around the zone.
Right. That's right. We just talked about it. He has to be around the zone. So he's going to have to get a few more swings and misses in the zone. This is a guy who I envision, whether it's in 2017 or down the line, there's going to be a year where Luke Weaver shows up and all of a sudden there's going to be an article about, oh, his pitch selection has changed. He's throwing a cutter 20% of the time now. It's going to happen.
Just makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. He is the phylum of pitchers who wind up adding a cutter. And I think
because the breaking ball so far, it's not ever become a weapon.
Right.
And at some point, it either has to become a weapon, or if it doesn't, you have to find something else.
He also has a chance. He has a chance to be, you see the success that a guy like Kyle Hendricks has had in the big leagues. This guy's more athletic, similar repertoire. He does not have the 7 changeup that Kyle Hendricks has, but he throws harder. If he approaches Kyle Hendricks' fastball command, he could be that similar repertoire kind of pitcher where Kyle Hendricks was using his changeup like 27% of the time last year.
But you want to talk about the interesting guy to me that I look at him because they're similar. Now, Jarrell Cotton's changeup is better than Luke Weaver's.
That's another guy I was about to bring up.
Luke Weaver's control is better, I would say, than Jarrell Cotton's a little bit. Because Luke Weaver's control can be pretty special. But those are the two guys who are right now on the cusp of graduating from prospect status, who have fastballs and changeups,
and Jose De Leon. Those are three guys, three totally different bodies.
Yes.
I mean, because De Leon's like 6'3 and thick. Jarrell Cotton's like 6 foot and about an average, 190. And Weaver's this little skinny whippy guy. All three.
But like 6'1, 6'2.
Yeah, listed 6'2. All three guys, college draft picks, from De Leon from Southern, Cotton from East Carolina, Weaver from Florida State. They're going to have very similar pitch, like just when you break down how often they use their pitches. The best changeup of those three, wow, that's a tough call. I think it might be Cotton.
I think it's Cotton's.
But I think the best fastball of those three is De Leon's.
Mm-hmm.
The best combination of the two might be Weaver.
I think the best controls Weaver.
Right. But that's the thing. I think that the guy I like, the guy with the best fastball, and that's why I have De Leon ranked at the front. That was not where I expected that conversation to go, comparing those three very disparate guys. But they are
but
in the
they're
family.
Not. They look different, but they pitch similar.
They do pitch similar. They're in the same phylum of players, and I'm leading you to what you'll read more about that in the next Baseball America. JJ, the rest of this organization, again, there has been an accent on the international trying hard to develop international prospects, and that's their next couple of pitchers are some young Latin American arms. Is there guys that you like better?
Well, we do have Dakota Hudson there too, but Sandy Alcantara.
Yes.
Sandy Alcantara, Junior Fernandez are guys who I do think you ask, you kind of question, okay, is one of them or both of them going to eventually end up in the bullpen?
Right.
And I think that's a fair question. But they both have electric arms.
Yes.
They both have, and to both of their credit, they're a little further along now than they were. You know.
And then there's the wild card down in the Gulf Coast League, Alvaro Siejas, and Alvaro Siejas is really fascinating to me because ranked highly in our Gulf Coast League list that Ben Badler did back in September, but he is officially listed at 5'9". He is not 5'9".
He's listed at 5'8".
See, it's ridiculous. I remember asking Ben about that, being like, this 5'8", 5'9 guy sounds pretty interesting. And Ben's like, that was an email. And then he called me back because he was exercised about it, that Ciejas, that height and weight must come from like when he was 15 years old. Now he's like 6'2", 170, kind of like the same listing as Luke Weaver. He's much more physical than that. But Ben's all about Alvaro Ciejas. And this is a guy who, if you're looking for a pick-to-click in a deep keeper league, and you want somebody who's got the Ben Badler Latin Palace seal of approval, it's Ciejas. A guy who we just had a real struggle of where to rank him in this top 30. He probably needs to be a 55 extreme, not a 55 high with his grade. Because he is not 5'8", but 91 to 95, and you know, spins a breaking ball. This guy just sounds really exciting.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
The way I wanted to go is a little different, which is the other thing the Cardinals do, and this is a consistent, when we talk about, because there still are some college bats in here.
Yeah.
And the thing that the Cardinals do is one of the ways they try to get value is they try to take guys who really could be defined as tweeners.
Right.
And try to see, can we coach them up?
Yes.
To where, and you can go back to Matt Carpenter, John Jay.
Yep.
Go back further, you go to Alan Craig.
Right.
You know, you have
Stephen Piscotty was kind of one of those guys. Is he going to have enough power to be a true corner guy?
And so what they try to do a lot of these times is they say, can we take this guy? Can we coach him up to where the position that most people think he won't be able to stick at?
Yeah.
We will be able to get him to work. And Matt Carpenter, now, was he a good second baseman? No.
Right, exactly. I mean, his bat turned out to be way better than the industry thought, and obviously the knee injuries that he had in college, you know, dampened the enthusiasm for him, but that's one of the all-time draft successes. It was a 13th round pick, one of the best college hitters drafted in the last few years.
John Jay, I mean, again, you can find a lot of people who, a lot of scouts who still are like, no, John Jay's not a center fielder. John Jay played center field for them for a number of years.
Yeah, 5 years, yeah. They kept on trying to replace John Jay, and he kept on being the best guy. And Alan, now the Cubs have him like as an insurance policy. You know, I don't think he's going to beat out Albert Almora because I love Almora as a defender, but Jay might do it. He's been counted out before.
And then you go and you say, okay, well, let's look at this, and this now, and you say, Harrison Bader sitting here at 7.
Yeah.
What was Harrison Bader, the question is?
Can he play center field or not? Field?
And that still would be something where you'd say, survey says, we don't know.
Right.
But there still is a chance.
I would say signs, for me, point to no on a championship caliber team. I don't even think he's quite as athletic as, say, Randall Grichuk that they have in the big leagues, who played a lot of center field for them last year. If the Cardinals are going to get better defensively, JJ, they have to start moving away from some of these tweeners. And their defense last year is really that was the number one reason for their downfall.
So this leads me to the next one, which is Paul DeJong.
Yeah, that's right.
Paul DeJong. I'm a Paul DeJong fan. I think you're a Paul DeJong fan, too.
He has fascinated us both since his draft year.
Going back to Illinois State. You know, but that being said, if you say, can Paul DeJong play third base, I think he could play it. Second base, maybe a stretch, but
that was one of his primary college positions, second base.
But where the Cardinals are planning right now, he will show up in spring training, and they're going to see, can he be a shortstop?
I mean, I love the story about it where he goes to the fall league and he notices, wait a minute, there are three of us playing third base here and only one guy at shortstop. And the coach is like, you need to go over to shortstop when I'm hitting you grounders. When we're hitting in and out, you go to short. And that's where he played. And I almost wonder if the Cardinals are like, hey, if Jed Jerko can do this, this guy can do it. JJ, this is a guy who I think we thought maybe coming out of college that his best position would be catcher. If it wasn't for the knee injury, maybe he'd be a catcher. Maybe he'd be third base. Maybe he'd be right field. He's got arm strength. I find it a stretch that Paul DeJong can be a big league shortstop, just being honest.
I do too.
I'll
come back to is I had Illinois covered. I did not talk to any scouts in that area who even fashioned the idea. Like,
right.
I mean, he, to put it in the perspective, in the area I had, there were different players, but it was like, he had the same questions that kind of Ian Happ had, which was, guy can hit, where is it going to go? Where is he going to play? But an Ian Happ, but Ian Happ, who cannot play shortstop.
Right.
But Ian Happ had, who did play a little shortstop at Cincinnati, the guys would bring it up and go, he can't do it. But you know, you wish he could.
Right.
He, I didn't have anyone bring it up as even a, like a possibility.
Again, with the young, it was guys wanted to see him catch. Mm-hmm. You know, guys wanted to see him catch or play third base. It's stunning that he's moved to shortstop. And I guess, again, the stunning part of it for me isn't that he's given it a whirl. The stunning part is what the Cardinals are having him try it after what happened in the big league team last year, where they just, their lack of athleticism caught up to him. And obviously they tried to address that by signing Dexter Fowler, although other part of that was probably like, let's not lose a first rounder.
But let me argue this, though. I will go counter to that, which is that I don't think that their lack of athleticism caught up to them last year. They could rightfully say, no, this has worked for us. It didn't work last year, but over the last 5, 6, 7 years, it's worked for us. And so now it doesn't, you know, I don't think they have to do this massive course correction where they say, we are off of the idea. They have guys who got older.
Yeah.
And so what's happened is that...
Well, Johnny Peralta is one of them.
Right. But I do think that one of the things that has happened is that when you have these guys who... One problem with this is when you have these guys and you are coaching them up to move to a position that is at the ultimate edge of their ability,
mm-hmm.
those guys do not last there usually nearly as long
yes.
as... If you say, if you take John Jay and you ask him to be a center fielder, John Jay is not capable of playing center field for 10 years
right.
or anything like that. That's what happened. Alan Craig, the reality is that Alan Craig, if you look at Alan Craig's career, it didn't take that long for you to say, okay, so we're going to play him now.
Yeah, that's right. That's a big part of it.
And you look at really Matt Carpenter, and it's like Matt Carpenter at his peak athleticism can handle positions. And the second that the footwork just gets a little, he's a little slower,
right?
A little less reaction time, all you know, a little more reaction time, I should say. All that's where I think these problems come in.
Well, another part of it is that they used to have a guy who was their defense first guy. That was Pete Cosma. That was 3 or 4 years ago. But they used to have one guy where, like, okay, your job is to make every play look easy and to make things easier on our pitching staff. Also, their pitching staff is not as power. But, you know, they've added Carlos Martinez, but Wainwright doesn't have the strikeout rate he used to. They didn't have Lance Lynn last year. Michael Wacha hasn't worked out. When you go out and sign Mike Leake, and you have Mike Leake throwing in front of Jed Jerko playing shortstop and Carpenter at second or third, that's not a good recipe. And I just think the overall mix, they were always on that edge. I think the tipping point went in the other direction last year, both in terms of the position players, Peralta and Carpenter, declining defensively, and the pitchers being guys who needed defense behind them more, and them, even as the trend in the big leagues is more strikeouts, I think they were less of a strikeout staff just by not having Lance Lynn. But you know, now if two-fifths of your rotation is Reyes and Martinez, all of a sudden that's a little bit better. But that, you know, JJ, they've also been a team that, whether it's Seth Maness or Bowman last year, they've always had that one designated ground ball guy. If you're doing that and you see the value of that in your bullpen, you gotta make you bring those guys in to get two. And if Jed Jerko doesn't get it, what's the point of having that guy on your roster? Not the same.
That's one of the things I'm fascinated to kind of see. Like at the big league level, they know. I mean, I think they know. Like their absolute upper end of what they can do, I feel like, is not that far above kind of the lower end for the Cubs.
Their strikeout rate did decline last year, not precipitously. But, yeah, I agree. Their upside is, I think, quite good. You know,
But I think their upside, like, what is the floor, do you think, like, I mean, again, for the Chicago team this year? 90
well,
wins?
Well, you know, baseball perspective, I'm not a big Pecota guy, but Baseball Prospectus released Pecota today, the day they were releasing these. I guess the Pecota projections had the Cubs at 91 wins. That would be a 12-game decline from last season. I don't see that happening. So,
I mean, I think 90-91 is, I'm saying, I think 90-91 is kind of the low end for the Cubs.
I mean, I don't know if they're going to win 103 again, but are you telling me that over a three-year span, they're a 97-win team? That's why I would say 91 this year. I think their floor is actually a little higher than that. I think they're like 93, 94 wins.
Again, I could see, like, I'm saying, like,
there's still two teams in this division that are bad.
To me,
the Brewers and Reds are not contenders.
To me, 90 wins is, wow, they survived. They're pitching. They had a lot of injuries. You know, there's, like, things like that happen. That's, to me, though, when I say, like, a realistic floor, and where is the realistic ceiling, do you feel like, for this Cardinals team?
Well, 86 wins last year, I thought they underperformed, you know. I think they're going to be better this year by a decent amount because, you know, again, Wainwright is declining a bit, but Martinez, they get Lance Lynn back, and Alex Reyes. I like the look of their rotation now better than I did last year. So
I feel like it also because they do have
– I feel like they could be a 92-win team, that kind of team. I do think they're going to be a little bit more athletic, and I think Dexter Fowler really fits and, you know, makes – Steven Piscotty and Grichuk as your wings, as your two corner outfielders, that makes more sense. But to me, so much is on Aledmys Diaz on their big league team. You know, is he good enough defensively at shortstop, and is he going to hit like he hit last year? That's a big question. And that's where Paul DeJong comes back in, JJ. Diaz is trying to be the first homegrown Cardinal shortstop since Ozzie Smith. And that's just what's so amazing. This is an organization that's had... Gary Templeton, I'm sorry. Gary Templeton. And that was 1977, was his rookie year. But that's their last, like, Pete Cosmo was homegrown, but he wasn't good. So, and he was, you know, as soon as they could replace him, they replaced him.
But to be fair for the Cardinals, after they traded
They've done everything
Smith,
else.
Well, I was going to say, but also after they traded for Ozzie Smith, one thing about that is that...
They didn't need one for 18 years.
There was this 18-year stretch where they're like, we don't, if we grow, right. It's not going
to
matter.
But when they tried to replace him, they couldn't do it inside, in-house. They did it with Royce Clayton. And it's been a succession. It's never been a consistent position.
And Diaz, hey.
They've done fine without it. But it's just odd to me that their answer internally is Paul DeJong. That's just
weird.
No, their
answer internally is Delvin Perez, but he's a ways away.
We'll see about that one. Delvin Perez, who committed a ton of errors last year in the Gulf Coast League. It's the Gulf Coast League. He is twitchy. And if you're looking to be more athletic... That's the way to go. I mean, what'd you think draft day when they drafted Perez and Dylan Carlson? It's almost like Dylan Carlson was the perfect handcuff for Delvin Perez to, like, you know, be his chaperone on most of the low minor leagues.
I loved it from the standpoint of I do look at it and say, yes, can you say, you know, did he fall because of a drug test? Absolutely. Performance enhancing drug test.
Yes.
Did he fall because of that? Sure. That did mean that they got a guy better than they should have been able to get.
Right.
That's I do look at it and say, we were hearing, before all this, we were hearing possibilities that Perez could have gone in the top five.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think he was in the mix as high as two. He was in the mix at two.
And so you have that, and then you look at where they got him. That's the kind of thing that you don't normally get to do when you pick as low as they pick.
And that's why they did it. I mean, I think it made a lot of sense, especially when... You probably figure at the time with this investigation going on, we're probably not going to have a first-round pick in 2017, and they didn't.
That's one thing. I believe that penalty was very light. I know you say that I don't know what else they could have done. I look at it and say you have a rather wide discretion. There are things you could have maybe done. You could have even extended it maybe into next year or whatever, but – At the same time, they're going to get very little out of the 2017 draft now.
Yes, they are. And they have the smallest bonus pool by a whole lot. So,
I mean, they can't get creative about it.
Right. No.
They're not going to say...
This is going to be a classic Cardinals. We're going to take the best hitter who grades out in terms of the numbers. They're going to take college performers, and that's really about all they can afford.
And that's all they can afford because you can't even take... I mean, there's not going to be, we're going to take the high school guy who falls. That's not an option.
It is not an option for them this year. So we're talking about the St. Louis Cardinals list. And, JJ, one thing that they have some intriguing international signees at lower ends of the farm system. I know that Matt Eddy's favorite is Eliezer Hernandez. I want to make sure I get his name right. It's Eli Alvarez, the second baseman in the Midwest League. Eliezer Alvarez is correct. He just – I guess the thing is, if you're looking for a statistical performer in the minor leagues – He probably checked as many boxes as anybody last year. He just seems like, again, he's athletic, but he's a bat first guy. So that's the Cardinals are actually being true to themselves.
Right.
Really.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think that this is. I do think that they have moved some guys at the big league level.
But it's strange though the way Mo is talking about things.
Right. But I do think that more that what you're really seeing here is that they have moved in a way at the big league level because they didn't have a choice. You know, they had to move some of these guys.
Right.
I do think at the minor league level, they haven't changed their philosophy. They believe that they can coach guys up. And, you know, like you said with Delvin Perez, yeah, I'll ask an interesting question with this. Delvin Perez, and he had a lot of errors. Who is the last shortstop who had the tools to play shortstop and just wasn't reliable enough to do it?
BJ Upton.
BJ, that jumps to mind. I come up with three.
Okay.
And the third one of these is almost a stretch. Starlin Castro has flirted with that line.
Yeah.
In his career.
Yeah.
Because, again, you there is a point where it's like, okay, no, this is too many errors.
I mean, he's a thicker guy. So second base with the Yankees fits a lot better for him.
But he was even – but when he was with the shortstop with the Cubs, there were times where it's like, this is less reliable than you need your big league shortstop to
Right.
be. So you got Starlin Castro. You got B.J. Upton, who absolutely – had to be moved off the position because he just never could make the routine play the way you need to.
There is an alternate universe where he's a shortstop, where Lou Piniella was never hired as the manager in Tampa, and they decided to be patient with him because I saw him do it at Durham. I saw him make spectacular plays. I saw him make all the hard plays, the routine plays. You know, when you're in AAA, when you're 19 – and the game speeds up on you, that's when you stop making the routine plays.
And the third one I can come up with is Jose Austin.
Sure.
And that's going that's way back.
That's going way back,
So my point being, though, is that there are very few. If we've been talking about, you know, when Javier Baez was in the low minors, this is something we could be saying of Javier Baez. I know Javier Baez is not an everyday shortstop.
But you watch him and you're like, that guy can play shortstop.
Right. Well, so my point with Delvin is if you give me twitchy and unreliable over not twitchy and reliable in a young shortstop 10 out of 10 times.
Yes, especially when they're 19 years old.
We can fix, if you're a team, you can look at it and say, we can fix the reliability. The reliability will come, and part of it will come also as they climb the minors because all of a sudden there won't be boulders in the infield like there is in Bakersfield. You know, you have that. But at the same time, you know, again, now the Cardinals say, hey, we can coach them up, but range is range.
Range is range, and he needs to develop body control, but he has all the ability, athleticism, agility, arm strength. He has all those. He checks all those boxes you're looking for at shortstop.
The thing to me that stands out about this is that, and I agree with you. If they had not had those 1-2, it would have been tough to make him number one.
Yeah,
it would have been. That said, I do feel like that is a pick when you say that what could happen for the Cardinals in a very good way over the next few years. They got a guy there. It's a risky pick in some ways, but they got a guy there who could be better than a whole lot of guys who were drafted ahead of him.
I totally agree. Yeah, for me, considering they had three picks, they had no choice but to take Delvin Perez. You know, they could afford to take a risk. You know, they didn't take him. The Padres were going to take him afterwards.
They got Delvin Perez. And then you get in the same draft, you get Dakota Hudson and Dylan Carlson. You spread, you know.
Yes.
Again, and they needed that is their 2016 and their 2017 draft.
Pretty much. And JJ, I wanted to ask you, which of their college arms do you like any of their college arms? Are you a Dakota Hudson fan? Hashtag Tennessee Prep Class of 2013. Or Austin really Gomber from previously. Or Connor Jones. You know, I used to be a big Connor Jones fan. He just never changed in college. I think that there was prospect fatigue that set in with that guy. You know, he was number 33 in the 2013 prep pitching, number 33 on the BA 500 coming out of high school in 2013. I thought he was the best prep pitching prospect in that draft class. 2013 was just a bad year for prep pitching. I thought he was the best guy in that class, and he wound up going to school. He wanted to go to Virginia. He loves to squat. You know, you're not going to take that delivery away from him. That's what he did in high school.
Right. This is not something
the Virginia guys didn't start him with that. That's what he did in high school. I remember seeing him do it in high school. He just hasn't gotten better over 3 years at UVA.
And really, let's be honest,
in terms of his stuff, hasn't gotten better. He performed very well, and what he does well. He can take the fastball to run in on right-handed hitters. He can run it away from right-handed hitters. He has a little, you know, good little slider. But the changeup never came along. He doesn't really opposite side hitters still vex him a bit.
So. And the control, like as a junior, was less than you wanted to see.
Right. He just, and again, there wasn't a step. This is a guy who touched a lot of 96s early in his career. He doesn't do it as often anymore. So we'll see if throwing on a pro schedule, does he throw more fastballs so his fastball gets better? Or is he a guy who, wait a minute, we throw today? I thought my throw day was in 2 days. Oh, today's my throw day? You know, he might be that guy. Dakota Hudson was a guy who I think we were shocked that he fell to where the Cardinals got him, and then we thought he was going to go a lot higher in the draft. This is a guy who we thought could have been the second or third college pitcher drafted in 2016 and come off the board really high, and he wound up coming off, what, 34th?
Yeah, but at the same time, I think that's the right spot for him to come off, to be honest.
Yeah, and he finished the year in Double-A in the bullpen in the postseason in the Texas League playoffs for Springfield. I'm interested to see how the Cardinals handle him. I have a feeling he's going to be a guy who starts at high Class A Palm Beach and could move very quickly if he hits the ground running and has success. He's got the makings of two above-average pitches.
If you said, which of these guys do I feel most comfortable with having a big league role of some sort?
Yeah.
It's Hudson.
Yeah.
It's Hudson because I don't know what that role is going to be. I don't think – I mean, I kind of think it's – for a guy who was a successful college pitcher, I think it's a – well, both – these guys are lower ceiling guys.
Yeah.
But I think Hudson it's a little easier for me to see where that works for Hudson, of these guys. I still like Gomber a little bit, you know. But
yeah, I do too.
But Gomber, I think in the long run, I think he probably looking especially now again the Cardinals have some depth of pitching prospects. I think he's a guy you let that curveball work in short stints.
He's a fourth or fifth starter if he's a starter. I don't see him as an impact rotation guy.
I think he's probably a reliever.
Yeah, and to me, I have
a little
bit less.
Fastball plays up a little bit more there.
Yeah,
and then if I can get ahead in the count.
Right.
It's a left-handed hitter or a right-hander, really, to be honest. I can drop that curveball.
Yeah, and he's, to me, just the kind of the classic big, tall left-hander. The fastball's just probably not enough.
That's where I think you put him in the pen, and then, not that it's great, but it's enough.
Yeah, but this is, they have pitching depth. Ran out of space in the magazine on their depth chart because they had so many ranked pitchers. But Zach Gallen, Mike Myers, and Darian Gonzalez on the depth chart, there's more after that. We just ran out of room.
Zach Gallen, again, I keep applying this really unfair standard in some ways, but Zach Gallen on the Marlins system.
Yeah, he's probably very similar to Cody Poteet. And Cody Poteet was 14 on the Marlins. They're birds of a feather. Pitchability college right-handers who had fairly accomplished college careers.
Gallen, I would say probably.
Gallen has better secondary stuff. No, they probably throw about the same. I mean, Zach Gallen's not a real physical guy. 6'1", 170. And I know there were reports of him throwing really hard to start last year, but
I'm not saying. Really hard.
He's like a 90 gun. He sits right around 90, JJ.
Right.
And he gets in the seventh, eighth inning, which he won't do very often in pro ball, but he'd be sitting 88. So he's not a velocity guy.
I've seen Poteet at 86, though. So
was that at UCLA or
no? At Greensboro.
At Greensboro. Yeah, they're very similar guys. Poteet's a little bit bigger. Yeah. I think of Poteet as like a Tom Kohler kind of guy, and Gallen's a little bit different. But
right, but the point being,
either one of those guys, I would have more confidence in them as a Cardinal with their pitching development history than as a Marlin.
But I will say
now they have Jim Bennett. It's different.
Let me see. We do not know yet. I'm fascinated to see what happens to Tyler Kolek this year. Tyler Kolek
being rebuilt from the ground up.
We have
that's
the technology.
Right. He is the $6 million man, so it works. But it'd be a little bit bigger doll than that the Steve Majors doll where you look through his eye. That was a pretty cool toy, I have to say. That was a cool toy. Overall, JJ, when you have the St. Louis Cardinals organization kind of in this state where they are, I wouldn't say state, but when they're chasing the Cubs, I'll be curious to see if that changes. Like you said, right now there's really not. They're doing what they do. There's not a lot of changes to their philosophy. But I'll be interested to see if if we see this team, if they're contending and they're close to the Cubs. I think they have the depth to make a deal if they need to make an aggressive deal at the big league level. And they're chasing the Cubs. I mean, I don't think they want to be in this position looking up at the Cubs very long. That's just not. That's not how they're wired.
But I will say this right now. I feel if you ask me to predict 17, 18, 19, think the Cubs go three. I think the Cubs finish ahead of the Cardinals each of the next 3 years.
I think that's very plausible. I do. And I think the Cardinals are looking. That's why.
But that doesn't mean the Cardinals are a playoff team.
Right.
But I mean, the tough thing is
they right now, they're like the Pirates 13, 14, 15, 16, where it's like if they win, you're looking up at the Cardinals and you have that one game playoff.
Right.
But they're in that similar position.
They're in a similar position. It's not a terrible position to be in because this is a team that has the feel of a team that could contend for playoff contention for several years to come. But that being said, they are in the same division with a budding dynasty.
Yeah, a juggernaut. And that's the problem is that it's not a bad position to be in if you just had 20-plus losing seasons like the Pirates. But if you're the Cardinals and you're the flagship franchise of the National League, which they are, and you look at their, you know, year by years, and this is an organization that in the 21st century, they've made the playoffs more often than they've missed. So the expectations are not contend for the wild card. That's just not how they're wired. And that's so I think it's going to be fascinating to watch how the Cardinals, do they, again, to use the football term, do they stay on schedule? Do they keep doing what they do? Or does the pressure of chasing the Cubs make them change? And I think this kind of way they're talking about defense at the big league level makes me think they're starting to try to change. And the last organization that I remember that was a consistent playoff team but then tried to change was the Twins. And they tried to change, and they got off schedule. They became something they are not, and they've had one winning season since.
I will say, I trust the Cardinals' process, the Cardinals' way, I should say. It's not the Cardinals' process.
Sure.
It's the Cardinals' way. I do believe that they will stick with it, and I don't think – this does not strike me as an organization that essentially – I agree with you. Like, if you do that, if you're the Cardinals, that's – I don't think that's going to help you. And I look at the moves that they made this offseason, and nothing strikes me as there was no panic to it. Even coming off of 86 wins, got Dexter Fowler.
Right.
Re-upped one of their own guys.
It wasn't a panicky offseason. You're right.
To give a bad analogy, but this was not a George Steinbrenner.
Right.
You know.
But 2 years ago, JJ, 2 or 3 years ago, the Cardinals thought, even with the Cubs with their 97-win season, they were like, okay, we won 100 games this year. The Cubs won 97. But at that time, the Cardinals thought, well, we're going to either get Jason Hayward or David Price in free agency. We've just had Jason Hayward here. He liked playing here. And David Price grew up a Cardinals fan, and we're going to get him. And they didn't get either one.
And by the way,
so far, so good. Yes.
Jason? The best thing you could do for us is go to Chicago and sign a long-term deal and hit like a pitcher.
Yes. Be one of the 10 worst offensive players in baseball. That said, they still have those rings, even despite him. I don't think he's going to be as bad as he was last year going forward.
I would hope not for him and for baseball.
And David Price, I know he wasn't what the Red Sox thought they were getting last year, but that's year one. I mean, the Cardinals, you know, 2 years ago, they looked at this. They'd rather have David Price and Jason Hayward than not.
They would, but so at the same time,
they haven't panicked yet. But I'm just in the last year. If you're a Cardinals front office guy, that's what's in your head. We missed on our top targets. We won 14 fewer games, and the Cubs became the preeminent franchise. And we lost a first round. We lost two draft picks and got hammered in their minds, hammered in the ground control scandal.
But I'll flip that. You're right. They lost David Price. They lost Jason Hayward. And a year later, they can look at it and say, you know what?
Okay, we
dodged a bullet of Hayward, which we would potentially, that would be for their organization, more so than the Cubs.
Harder
to dig out. They dodged a bullet. And yeah, they didn't get David Price. And we also know that they could have had David Price. And that, they didn't finish three games short.
Yeah, he wasn't 14 WAR. Yes, you're right.
So they can look at it and say, again, I think this is a very rational organization. They can look at it somewhat unemotionally, which I think is a valuable thing to do. They can look at it and say, nope, right now we are not as good as the Cubs. However, our hope is we still have young pitching. We have more young pitching coming up. We have a lineup that has some youth to it. Again, more guys on the way. We've been able to piece. We got Dexter Fowler at a reasonable, we found another piece, but he's not this is not a contract that, if this went poorly with Dexter Fowler, it's not going to kill him. And then they can say their hope is, for one, maybe they don't. Maybe they're the Giants to the Dodgers.
Right.
Which is fine. Hey, Dodgers, winning divisions, yeah. We'll win World Series. Or the other part of it, though, is that your other hope is the Cubs have hit really well on pitching, but their pitching, there is a little bit more of a tenuousness to their pitching.
Definitely.
And you hope that that's going to come back, and then you say, okay, if that's the case, then they're going to have a better lineup, we'll have a better pitching staff, and we'll see. And part of that is again, with the Cardinals, some of this backup, like you said, Lance Lynn was out. Michael Wacha has...
But can't count on Michael Wacha.
You cannot.
Right now.
You cannot. And I will say, if Michael Wacha has... The best of Michael Wacha's career is behind him, that's still a good pick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm not knocking that.
It is one where you say, there were teams that did not take Michael Wacha because they thought in some way that this was what... They thought that they were worried about how well he would hold up over the long term. And he's only right now had one bad year.
Right.
But it may be that you got, hey, credit to them. They got good. They got value out of him as a 21-22 age 23 season.
Yes.
And by doing so, even if you get nothing else out of him, you say, you know what? That was a wonderful ride.
Yeah, 2012, 19th pick overall. And Mark Appel was the 8th overall pick in that draft, unsigned by the Pirates. But how different would this have been if the Pirates had taken Wacha at 8 and not Appel at 8? Well, number one, they wouldn't have Austin Meadows. They got him the next year with the 9th pick, and they got for not signing Mark Appel. So that's one of those sliding doors moments in the National League Central,
lot,
for sure.
There are a lot of those.
I think the Cardinals are well-positioned to contend, but I don't think they're well-positioned to overtake the Cubs. I do think that the Cubs are going to be very difficult to dislodge in the National League Central for years to come. But this division is really interesting. This is the 5th team we've done in this division. We've gone through the whole division. And there's optimism and reason for optimism for all 5.
Right. We're going to wrap up with the NL West.
Yeah.
And the NL West is a different deal. It's gotten a little better. But it is definitely still...
Mostly because La Russa is no longer a general manager or COO.
It's gotten better also, I think, really because of the Rockies. Like, at least there's now a team that goes into the season thinking, you know, maybe we can contend with it. Because it's been a two-team...
Yeah, not in the delusional state like Arizona did last year.
So you do have that. But it is not like the Central, where everyone in the Central clearly has a lane where they are.
Right.
The Pirates are the one that's the closest to, like, are they on the outside? Are they on the left lane of the Autobahn where, you know, the unlimited speed limit? Or are they on, you know, the right side where they're kind of, you know, pulling off to rest, recover? But everyone in that division, there's something interesting going on there.
They have some defined philosophies in those organizations. And it shows. Because, like you said, they all kind of know. There's no question about what these teams are doing. Who the contenders are. Who's rebuilding and where those teams are in their rebuilding, what their philosophy has been in that rebuilding. So a lot of fun going to the National League Central. JJ and I are going to be back later this week. I'm not sure if it'll be the next podcast, JJ, but I know we will go ahead and I know you'll see us. If you listen to these, you'll see us Friday night on MLB Network. And just stay tuned to Baseball America.
We got Padres coming up. We got 5 teams left to go. We will have talked every team's farm system before the start of the college baseball season.
Yes.
That is our Division 1 college. Division 1, let me make clear.
Yeah, junior colleges are
junior
all
Junior colleges,
out there.
I'm excited. There's a great matchup on Wednesday. So, but we do want to remind you again that this is the Baseball America podcast, and it is sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. Go to baseballism.com for all the details and to order your gear, or you can visit their retail locations in Cooperstown and Scottsdale. That's baseballism.com. And if you enter the code BA2017, you'll save 20% off your order. Facebook Live, you'll see us sporting some Baseballism gear, but it's baseballism.com. For John Manuel, I'm JJ Cooper. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.